Hey, it's Mass. Since 1928, Rodenizer Home Services has been your trusted local experts for all your plumbing needs. From bathroom and kitchen fixtures to leaking pipes and water heaters, Rodenizer offers you the higher standards of professionalism. When you have questions, Rodenizer has answers, all backed by their 100% customer satisfaction guarantee. Their motto is simple: nice people, great service. So experience the difference today with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today.
Red Sox talk when you want
this
it.
This place is great.
Listen to the Baseball Reporters Podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com or on the Sports Hub app.
Radio and the internet.
Red Sox talk when you want it. Listen to the Baseball Reporters Podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com or on the Sports Hub app. You don't have to lift a finger to wake up to Toucher and Rich.
Go ahead.
Just tell your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And hello again, everyone. A very pleasant good afternoon and welcome to Foxborough's Gillette Stadium on opening day 2018. A matchup of the New England Patriots and the Houston Texans.
Miller to his right out of the gun, and Miller drops it. The Patriots recover.
They got it.
Hightower was there along with Kyle Van Noy. And Deshaun Watson never completed the exchange.
That's on the quarterback.
Go, Patriots.
Takes the snap. He throws it left for Gronk. He makes the catch over two defenders and steps across the pylon for touchdown, Patriots.
The tight end looks pretty darn good to me.
Deshaun Watson goes down. Going to be intercepted by Gilmore. Gilmore with a touchback. Backstep off the snap. Throws it wide. White's wide open at the five. Trying to make a man miss. He does. Out of the grasp of a defender. Diving to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
It's almost like you're playing chess while other teams play checkers.
Shotgun snap to Brady. Fires to the right for Gronkowski. Makes the catch up the seam. And this time he holds on. Tackled by Cunningham from behind in Houston territory at the Texan 46. Looks to the back of the end zone for Dorsett. Touchdown, Patriots.
Dagger. An absolute dagger to the Texans.
Touchdown, Patriots.
It's almost like you're playing chess while other teams play checkers.
Watson takes the snap, gets in the pocket, dancing around. He rolls to his right. He pulls up. He launches downfield, well short of the end zone. That ball's going to come down and knocked away at the 15-yard line. Incomplete. And time has run out on the season opener as the Patriots run off the far sideline with a 27-20 victory over the Texans.
You can only throw that ball 50 yards. That's unreal.
But it's official. The Patriots are 1-0.
.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. Got Adam Jones in this morning. 617-779-0985. The Town Fair Tire Studios, which you heard throughout that montage, was not only a very good new Alice in Chains album, or at least the first cut from it, but also the smooth, sultry tones of one Bob Soucy, the voice of your New England Patriots. Real quick, before we talk the old pigskin, was Scott Zolak wearing the Zo blazer yesterday that we've seen pictures of this morning?
No, I think he's got to pony up and actually pay for one of those so it goes to a good cause. But yeah. I've seen it up close, Rich. It's an amazing likeness. Brian Fox did an amazing job on that.
I'll be honest. I tweeted out a photo of it, and I know that's it's a thing that Mr. Sid's doing to raise money for charity. And I was kind of mocking it at first, and then I saw it, and I'm like, all right, that's kind of rad. Like, that's hysterical. And the inside of it, it's his head all over there. And the only thing is, though, if I was Scott Zolak, if I knew somebody who bought a jacket with my face all over it, I probably wouldn't ever want to meet that person. Like, it would be like, as I was saying earlier, like a I want to wear your skin situation.
Can you sign this, please?
In blood.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something that I would want to be around. All right. So, you know, we've talked a lot about some of the decision-making that Bill O'Brien had yesterday. The play calling was suspect. The team just didn't seem ready. And I'm not even going to knock Deshaun Watson too much because it's his first game back after injury. You know, you expected maybe not as bad as it was, but him not to look like he did last time he was here. But when you look at the decision-making and play calling of Bill O'Brien, are you kind of reevaluating your opinion of him from when he was here with the Patriots? In other words, I'm starting to think maybe we've been overrating him a little bit.
You know, Rich, it's funny because when asked about yesterday's game going in, I expected a very difficult matchup with a defense that could get after the quarterback. And, of course, thinking about Watson, the way he played last year, really a tall order for the Patriots offense. But there has been that hump that Houston's not been able to get over. And in part because the Patriots obviously have been superior to them during this stretch where the Pats have now gone 10-1. But you look at the last few years, some of the curious decision-making a couple of years ago when the Patriots were down in Houston, fourth down attempts, you know, even in the playoffs against Kansas City, the use of the Wildcat formation in that particular game when they were still in it and had a chance to score with J.J. Watt out of the Wildcat. You know, the last year's time management example late in the game. And you can point to a lot of different factors. I still think Bill O'Brien is a very good coach. What he did at Penn State, what he's done with the Texans overall with that rotation of quarterbacks is a testament to the quality of coach that I think he is. But saying that, you can point to a lot of curious decisions or, you know, maybe a lack of innovation when it comes to the game plan. Granted, they were hamstrung yesterday because they didn't have Will Fuller. But one of the things that stands out to me, if Bill O'Brien wants to simulate a lot of what the Patriots have done, he hasn't really had that stick mover, the slot receiver, like a Welker or an Edelman. And they drafted Braxton Miller from Ohio State. That didn't work out. So, you know, in some ways it's limited, you know, what they do. Again, if he wants to kind of replicate the offense the Patriots have had. But that being said, you know, I think they're, you know, some of the bloom has come off that rose, and you run a root for him because by every account of people who've been around him, whether at Penn State or in his previous college stops or Foxborough, being a Boston area guy born in Dorchester, you know, he's a guy you want to root for. And I hear nothing but great things about him from the people with the Texans. But I think, you know, yesterday is another game where, you know, maybe he comes away scratching his head and with some regrets.
He's getting called out this morning for not calling a timeout after that questionable Gronkowski catch. Do you think that that's worthy of the criticism?
I think so, because, you know, immediately Zoe in the booth, you know, was on top of it and said so. Then I think after seeing the replay, it would have stood as a catch, especially, you know, in comparison to the Hopkins play. And especially with the new rule where you don't have to survive the ground. But I thought Gronk had his hand cupped under the football. Nonetheless, I still think in that situation, you want to give the officials every opportunity. The Patriots were very alert to it, and they hurried to the line. But, you know, and O'Brien in that situation with the timeouts he still had available, you know, you don't want to fall behind the Patriots by multiple scores. And you get a big play like that, and it's a play that's somewhat questionable. I think you want to do everything that you can to give the officials the opportunity, the replay official the opportunity to take a good look at that play maybe once or twice.
And I'm a big fan of Bill O'Brien, but just the way he answered the question after the game, like he just, it's something about Gillette Stadium. And you would think, you know, with him and having Romeo Crennel and like, Brave, I mean, that they would know how this goes. And I've been saying it all morning long. They've seen teams when they were here who you knew immediately that the Patriots were going to win because they would just, they'd crap themselves when they got off the bus. There's something mental about playing here that some teams can't handle. And I thought of anybody, you would have a guy who's experienced the other side of that, that might be able to temper that and at least make wise decisions and not the kind that you usually see teams, lesser teams make.
Yeah, it's an important point because, you know, the institutional knowledge is there and these teams know each other so well. I mean, they've played now, what, four straight years, five times in that 4-year span, plus a preseason game and a week's worth of practices. This was the third straight year the Texans came into Gillette. And by and large, the team has stuck together in Houston. The nucleus of that team has been together. So they've been through it in the past. And you know, you think back to a couple of years ago in the playoffs, they had a great game plan defensively. And they, if they had any adequate quarterback play in that game, might have had a chance to pull the playoff upset. They certainly had the chance to do it. They might have been able to pull it off. So it is a bit curious. You know, you look at the yesterday situation, and I think the sensitivity or the defensiveness with that particular question. You know, I think that, you know, maybe a sign of that Bill O'Brien is feeling the same way that, you know, we are, in a sense, that, you know, they came in and they were unprepared and really to take advantage of what I thought was a great situation, that they had the Patriots in a perfect position to come in and get their season off to a good start.
Bob, what do you make of the story yesterday from Ian Rappaport that not only was Josh McDaniels given an extension to stay in New England, but he's being paid like a head coach? What does that mean for McDaniels' future and I guess more importantly, Belichick's future?
Well, I think a couple of things, Adam. First of all, it probably took head coach's money to keep, you know, Josh from taking a head coach's job elsewhere. And on top of that, I think that Robert Kraft, after the way last year ended and the Patriots ownership, had to take a long look at the short term and the long term. And, you know, I know what it was like going into that booth for me personally in Minneapolis. You know, I wondered, you know, is this going to be the end, frankly? Because you had Matt Patricia moving on. Daniels was ready to take the Colts job, not yet announced. In fact, the week before, I think during the AFC Championship or 2 weeks before, there had been a report that Joe Judge was going to move on as well. You had the sense that if McDaniels was leaving, then Jerry Schlinsky would leave. And you had a sense that maybe the whole staff was going to kind of start to go their separate ways and that maybe the end was imminent for Bill. And I think by keeping McDaniels in Foxborough, that restored a semblance and I think ultimately the reality of some stability for this team. I think very important to have, you know, Josh continue to run the offense. And I think his value is as great as a first-time head coach around the league in that capacity. And when it comes to Bill Belichick, you know, somebody told me he's pretty close to the situation. He thinks Bill's been re-energized by having Josh around. And, you know, I still think with Belichick, the passion is still there. You certainly see it in the press conferences that his attitude hasn't changed, at least this past Wednesday when he met the media. From what we see on the practice field, at least in training camp, now he's still coaching all 90 guys in that situation. So I don't think that, it means or portends that Belichick is going anywhere in the immediate future. I think he lives in the moment, and that's one thing that I've been told by some people as well who spent a lot more time around him than I have, that, you know, Bill really does live in the moment, the here and the now. And when he says that, you know, that's his approach, that truly is his approach.
Well, Bob, it was kind of a bummer yesterday because Jeremy Hill was having a very good game. And is he officially out for the season? I don't know. Has that been announced or anything?
No.
Yeah, I got to admit, I haven't seen anything yet in terms of the severity of the injury, but I've been making the rounds, just dropped off the kids at school and had a chance to check. But it is a disappointment because he had a good camp. You know, here's a guy that came in and hadn't had much special teams experience in Cincinnati. And, you know, he was actually somebody who was pretty excited about it when we talked to him in the preseason and really embraced, you know, everything about the Patriots, at least what we heard and what we saw on the practice field and in the preseason games. And, you know, it's a free play. Ball gets poked out of Gronkowski's hands. I mean, Hill had partially blocked a punt earlier. You know, is in a position to make the tackle and you know, an unfortunate situation where James Devlin comes in and hits him right on the knee. I heard, you know, some analysis after the game by one of the local orthopedic surgeons who's on television, Jess, who works with Greg Bedardic, and the last name escapes me. I beg your pardon, Jess. But, you know, saying that, you know, best case scenario, maybe it's an MCL and maybe it's going to be, you know, a number of weeks. Worst case, of course, it's multiple ligaments and it's going to mean the season.
All right, Bob, real quick about the defense. Were you as surprised as I was at how well they were able to bottle up Deshaun Watson? Granted, the Patriots' pass rush is much maligned, but they were top 10 last year and they've kind of continued that momentum.
Well, John, I think one of the areas where this team really improved in the offseason was up front defensively. And I think one of the biggest things is they have some defined roles now where Flowers is on one side and they have Claiborne and Dietrich Wise as well. Last year, it seemed they were completely unsettled on the defensive ends, constantly searching from the last week of the preseason when they went out and acquired a guy like Cassius Marsh, who obviously didn't work out, and until the last week of the regular season or last couple of weeks of the regular season when they signed James Harrison. So I think the definition of roles and more depth up there is a factor. Certainly, yesterday they got pressure on Watson. Now, was he the same quarterback yesterday as he was in week three a year ago? No. I mean, that's clear. You guys have touched on it and talked about it already. But I think this defense has improved. And I think it's deeper up front, and I think it's going to get better as the year goes along. But I think part of it is not having to move somebody like a Trey Flowers, even Wise, you know, inside as much, where they can get to the quarterback and he can use his ability. He's got a knack of getting leverage on guys, getting around guys, and yesterday a factor, certainly. The play of the Texans' offensive line, it wasn't a good offensive line last year. It's not this year. They lost the right tackle early in the game. Not to take anything away from the Patriots. But I do think that that's an area that we saw improvement in right from day one this year in training camp.
All right. Finally, Bob, at any point during the game yesterday, did you slowly turn to your left and say, hey, Zolak, where the hell is the Golden Tate level of talent that you were supposed to have at wide receiver that you promised us, you jackass?
And I'm still waiting. He's still banging that drum. And we're waiting. So
he's running out of time for that drum to make any sound. I mean, boy, I've never heard him more confident. When he was talking to you, I think it was during the fourth preseason game. Oh man, it was like he knew this. It was a certainty that they're getting a Golden Tate level guy. And that was you got to bust his chops a little bit for that, I'm sure.
Well, you know, there's still time before the trade deadline, so you know there's still a possibility out there. I was taking a look on the sideline before the game, not to say that Wes Welker at this age and this stage of his life is anywhere as good as Golden Tate is today. But I was making sure that Bill wasn't trying to make a recruiting pitch to get Welker off the other sideline and out of retirement to come join the Pats. But yeah, we're waiting, and it's still a possibility. Belichick says all the time that team building is an ongoing process. And, I think he's constantly looking to improve the roster. And this is a team, as we know, that could be very active throughout the first part of the season with roster moves and be very active at the trade deadline. They've got a lot of draft capital with which to work. They could have as many as 12 picks next year. And even if you take away the compensatory picks, still 8 draft picks. That's a lot with which to work, including, a couple of high picks. And, maybe those are better served by going out and making a trade for a guy that can come in and help. But the one caveat, though, is it's hard to learn this offense as a wide receiver when you have a full off season. It's almost impossible for most to learn it when you try to catch up on the fly. We know with Phil Dorsett what a difference the offseason made, at least with one game of evidence. But, nonetheless, if they can go in and get somebody of Golden Tate's caliber or even better, they'll take him.
All right, Bob Soucy, great job yesterday, and thanks for coming on with us. We're going to have you on the day after every game here on 98.5 Sports Hub. Appreciate you coming out with us, Bob.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. And I get a sense that the Vulture's a lot kinder in the morning than he is in the evening. So it's good to be with you.
I'm just a bag of sunshine that rubs off on everyone. So
I'm
everyone's a little happier and skipping a step when they're around Richie happiness. All right. I'll talk to you later. See you, man. By the way, quickly, somebody said, note to self, if I ever want to meet Rich Shurtleff, don't make a suit with pictures of him as the liner.
Right.
Because then I will run screaming the other way. A heated question about the Patriots was answered yesterday, and you guys might not even have seen this yet. This is breaking news. I will get to that right after all of this.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 98.5 Sports Hub.
Takes the snap. He throws it left for Knott. He makes the catch over two defenders and steps across the pylon.
Say, where's your tight end at? 98.5 Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. Adam Jones is here this morning, and there were a lot of questions this offseason involving the Patriots. Will Tom Brady be able to start the season and pick up right where he left off? Will he have any kind of chemistry with guys that he really wasn't able to work out with much this offseason? That was answered, I believe, yesterday when you said, yes, he's still unbelievable, especially with the guys that he trusts. And it looks like you even got Dorsett kind of entering that small circle of trust. I liked what I was seeing there. There were questions about Josh McDaniels that were answered this past weekend. Yes, it looks like he has a 5-year contract. And one of the reasons he stays because he's getting paid head coach money. There are questions about Alex Guerrero and his access to the team. Those questions have kind of been answered over the last couple of weeks. But one question that was not answered, that's really the number one question that's been lingering there for a while, and I'm just now finding out the answer to it, is something that a lady by the name of Charlotte Wilder just released an article on Sports Illustrated about, and I'll just read you the very beginning of it. It says, I have some terrible news, and I'm not sure how to break it to you gently, so I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off and say it. Tom Brady's fake newspaper, the TB Times, has folded.
Ugh.
That's right. Sources close to the people involved had confirmed to me that the Patriots quarterback and Prince of New England will no longer be posting strange comics on Instagram to celebrate wins. If you have no idea what I'm talking about or why this turn of events is so devastating, let me explain. Since 2015, Tom Brady's social media has been one of the most intriguing things on the internet. Before the AFC Championship game 3 years ago against Denver, a Photoshop of Brady riding the Broncos mascot appeared on Brady's Facebook page. Fans ate it up. The post got more engagement than anything Brady had ever published. I tracked down the guy who runs Brady's social media after that post went viral, but he wouldn't go on the record with me. He still won't. Ooh, secrecy. Ooh. Oh, I'm the guy who put Brady on a unicorn. Shh, don't tell. Might get myself in a little bit of trouble.
More high-level meetings going on there with other great ideas.
During the 2016 and 17 seasons, the Photoshops became more elaborate. They were designed to look like fake newspapers called the TB Times. Whether the creators of this publication knew that the Tampa Bay Times, known as the TB Times, already exist or just decided to ignore the fact remains unknown. The cartoons featured jokes about the teams the Patriots just beaten, and because New England doesn't lose very often, we're blessed with one basically every week for the past 2 years. Wow, that was 2 years? I thought it was just last year. Yeah, I guess it was two years ago.
Also, jokes?
Lots of jokes. the fidget spinners, for some strange reason, and alligators. In this newspaper, a story, one that made very little sense, started to play out. The pictures, all of which were drawn by an artist who signed them DK, featured a reptile named Croc. I became obsessed with figuring out what was going on. Who was Croc? How did the story end? I went down a rabbit hole so deep that I ended up reading the IMDb page of Bill Hader's entire acting career and searched the outfits he wore in every movie after Hader was featured a few times in the TB Times comics. I drew my own cartoons. I searched the HTML in the back end of tbtimes.org for clues in the code that would give me a hint as to what the croc represented. I investigated Tom Brady's eyebrows. I dissected Greek myths. I found the artist's friends on Instagram and sent them messages. I tracked down VDK last year, but just like the social media guy,
no,
he won't go on record with me. Most of the pictures are very well done, but they make you feel like you dropped a ton of acid and then read the Sunday comics while watching football. Finally, I went straight to the source. Last year at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, while battling 103-degree fever, I went to Brady's press conference and asked him what the deal is with the TB Times. First of all, wildly irresponsible, getting everyone sick if you have 103-degree fever going to media day. I don't like that very much at all. He said, quote, "I thought that was kind of a great way to commemorate some wins," he told me. "Some of the funnier ones came when we lost, and we didn't get a chance to put them out, sure. But maybe someday I'll show you some of the ones that we were going to put up, but we ended up losing the game."
B-sides.
Yeah, the B-sides, the rarities album. "But it's been a lot of fun. I got a couple guys I work with that work really hard, and obviously I'm not the only one doing the drawing." I'm not the one doing the drawing. I was like, ooh, Tom's there. "But they work really hard, run ideas by me, and I let them go with it. When I asked if he could tell me who Croc is, he said, 'No, but there might be reveal after this game.'" There wasn't, because the Eagles won the Super Bowl and the comics only ran after the Patriots wins. Philadelphia stole any chance we had at closure to this confusing narrative when Nick Foles decided to flap his wings, fly out from under the shadow of Jeff Fisher, and prove to Giselle Bundchen and the entire world that he could indeed throw and catch the ball at the same damn time. The Patriots didn't get that elusive sixth ring, and we didn't get a celebratory TB Times. I was heartbroken. I am a Patriots fan, but found myself so invested in Croc's story that I found I took the lack of a comic harder than the actual loss. I hope that we can pick up the scent again this season, that maybe we get some answers that the cartoons kept appearing. So after the Patriots won their first game with the Texans on Sunday, I refreshed Brady's Instagram obsessively for about an hour, but no post appeared. In the past, the TB Times would appear within minutes of a win. I began to worry. And then I got a message from a source close to the artist. He sent me a screenshot of text with DK where he asked DK about the TB Times, and DK says, "Not happening this year." A different source close to the quarterback said that the guys had, quote, "no idea what they were doing with the storyline in the first place." Look, I don't blame Brady for stopping the presses.
They're just making it up every week.
They're just like, "it's just stupid stuff." And Brady's like, "cool, man. Maybe they'll like me. Yeah, maybe they'll think I'm a normal human being.
Let's put a mustache on this crocodile."
It's like, you know, kids love crocodiles. What's up, Adult Swim? I have a... I can just see him going, yeah, man, this is my... The way he just comments on Instagram posts and just has no idea what he's commenting on, like the two rhinos eating each other body parts. And then,
careful.
I check myself there. And then there was also, you know, the Randy Moss one where he's doing a tribute to the trainer who had died, and he's like, you'd look better in a Patriots uniform. I just think he's just so bad at being a normal human being that he was just like, yeah, man, crocodiles are cool. He said, but look, I don't blame Brady for stopping the presses given the climate of the industry, but I am bereft. I've asked to speak to DK to try to get details on who Croc is and whether he and the social media guy had any plan, but I'm not holding my breath. I guess there are just some mysteries that will never get solved. What happened to Amelia Earhart? Where did D.B. Cooper go? Who killed Tupac? Did Dez Bryant catch the ball? Was the NBA draft water letter really frozen? Why didn't J.R. Smith know the score? Now we can add one more to the list. Who was Croc and what did he represent? No clownishness. No TB times.
Tough.
And it is devastating. It's going to be the biggest loss of the season, to be quite honest.
I'll tell you what. The newspaper industry, it's going through a tough time. Even the TB12s has to, or TB12 times, TB times.
The TB times.
Has to shutter its doors. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Need John Henry to bail him out or something.
DK tracked out. Somebody says we need a decoder ring for the TB times. It's not happening. Now, if you want to make your own, cool, man. Make your own TB times. I'll retweet it. Make me a good one.
A DIY.
What happened to the Croc? Let me know. Make a comic. I'll retweet it. Let's find out what kind of weird world Tom Brady lives in where a crocodile in a cartoon he thinks is A-okay and a cool thumbs up. All right, we will get to the stack, including there is a Celtic who is in deep trouble. He's going to be in court this morning. We'll give you the latest on that and everything else right after John Walk's headlines.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
.985 a sports hub. It's Touch and Rich, and the stack is brought to you by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Some kind of cruddy news over the weekend involving Jabari Bird from the Boston Celtics. Right now, he is at an undisclosed hospital, and it's not clear whether or not he's going to be able to appear in court this morning to face charges stemming from a, quote, domestic incident where he apparently, or reportedly rather, assaulted, choked, and kidnapped a person on Friday. Anytime that word kidnapped is thrown in there, that is when the numbers of years that you could get in prison go way up. They skyrocket. We saw that with O.J. Simpson.
You were saying this off the air that was the big issue with O.J. was keeping people in a hotel room, and then, you know, that added to his prison sentence.
And isn't it crazy because, like, you know, assault and choked, I mean, these are all awful things, but I mean, how often do we hear of, like, athletes and stuff just kind of getting a minimum amount of time or even probation? But it's once you throw kidnapping in there, that's when it gets serious. So he was taken to hospital for evaluation. Once his release is approved by doctors, police are going to be able to pick him up to the hospital, book him on charges, and then bring him to court. However, it's not clear, and I know they've been seeing on the TV that he's supposed to be in there at any moment now.
Yeah, they're like stationed outside in Brighton, right?
Tweet from A'Sherrod Blakely about an hour ago. He remains under guarded watch at a local hospital. Once released, he'll officially be charged for his alleged role. A court date possibly later today or tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, there is a law that bars police from disclosing a lot of the details of an alleged incident that involves domestic violence. So the police have not been allowed to say where he was arrested, what time it happened, the gender of the person who was allegedly attacked. But those are serious charges, and it sounds as of right now, he is, according to John and A'Sherrod Blakely, he is not going to be out and ready to go to court. So, listen, I mean, it sucks. It's an awful situation. It just, I mean, you know, it's Jabari Bird. I mean, it's like one of those things where it's like, if they cut him or if they released him, what does it matter to the Celtics?
It's just too bad. He was the summer league guy. I mean, he was a guy who took another step forward and limited role in games that didn't matter down a stretch. He performed very well at the end of last season.
I would just like it if for once there was like a no BS team, that if this any of this was found to be true, just get rid of the guy immediately.
Well,
you know, I mean,
shouldn't they?
Of course,
like,
they should.
So
but there's a lot of, and you know what, it's you hear a lot of NFL teams kind of sitting around and then getting guys back.
The Ravens are notorious.
Well, I mean, think about what happened with the guy, the Cowboys, who's now in the UFC. What was his name?
Greg Hardy.
Greg Hardy. I mean, there's too many situations where these guys who end up beating their girlfriends or wives, it kind of just like, we'll wait for everyone to kind of stop being angry, and then we'll bring you on back. But in a situation like this, I mean, if it's as bad as it sounds like
right.
It is,
then like you said, if it's true and it's as bad as it sounds, it's Jabari Bird. You can cut him tomorrow. There's no reason.
And I wouldn't even care if it's Kyrie Irving. And I know that sounds like, you know, whatever to say, but I mean, stuff like that. At some point, you got to say, all right, we have no tolerance for this, and we're not going to be one of those teams that is just we pussyfoot around and we're like, all right, let's wait for the public reaction and the public anger to go away, and then we'll kind of slowly slip them back in. I'm over that because it happens way too often, and it does fascinate me that some of these guys are still playing out there who have had this happen before, who have been responsible for this before, rather. All right, do you have the clip, Dan? Do you have it by any chance? Do we have that clip? Okay, that's right. All right. Well, over the weekend, if you didn't see it, Serena Williams lost her cool. She went nuts on the umpire who was basically saying that she was getting coaching from her guy. And she went nuts. She started smashing her racket. She screamed at the guy, the umpire, saying that you owe me an apology. I was not cheating. I would rather lose than cheat. You're saying this, you know, and my little girl looks up to me and blah, 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 and you need to apologize to me. And now Serena Williams' coach has come out and said, yes, I was coaching her. He admits to coaching her during the finals. However, he says, I am honest, I was coaching. I don't think Serena looked at me, so that's why she didn't think I was coaching, but I was. Like 100% of the coaches on 100% of the matches, so we have to stop this hypocrite thing. They said that Osaka's coach was coaching every point, too. So do you have any sympathy towards Serena Williams? Because afterwards, she was also complaining about how she gets fined for a lot of things or gets penalized for a lot of things that male players do not.
Yeah, so I would say no. I would say I have zero sympathy for Serena Williams, who, by the way, for all the complaining she does about the officiating at the U.S. Open, I think generally gets the benefit of the doubt from officials. Her coach came out and said she was cheating.
He was coaching her, was penalized for.
Which is, she was warned at first. Then, because she had a warning, when you slam your racket, you automatically get a penalty of a point later on in the second set, which she got. Then, for berating the official, which she did, you know, she called him a thief. She said he was stealing points. He took away an entire game for her, which she was already losing, by the way. She got smoked in the first set 6-2. She was losing in the second set 4-3. Osaka had the serve anyway. Osaka had only lost one serve all day. It's not like Serena was going to win. No, I have zero sympathy for her. Zero. And to bring in, oh, men have done this. I thought on the broadcast they said it best and they backed off this. Yeah, maybe men have berated officials more, but not when they had already been warned and had a point taken away. Like, not the third time that the official... She had been warned multiple times.
Well, here she is.
So to go off and call him a thief is ridiculous.
Yeah, if you didn't hear it, here's Serena yelling at the umpire, Carlos Ramos.
Carlos Ramos in the chair.
If he gives me a thumbs up, he's telling me to come on. We don't have any code, and I know you don't know that. And I understand why you may have thought that was coaching. But I'm telling you, it's not. I don't cheat to win. I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know.
And there was more, and she went in and said, I demand an apology. I demand you apologize to me. I have a daughter, and I don't want her to think that I cheat. You owe me an apology and started yelling at her. Now,
well, guess what? Your coach said you cheat. Your coach said he was coaching you. You said that wasn't happening. You got caught red-handed cheating.
Listen, I don't know, because I haven't seen the breakdown of the numbers as to what penalties are given to female players over male players. Maybe she has a point. But the one thing that apparently is well-known is that this guy, Carlos Ramos, the umpire, is notorious for being a stickler for violations. As a matter of fact, I have a list right here that's enormous. Like in 2017, Novak Djokovic was given a fault on a serve for time violations. Djokovic got it in 2018, one for slamming his racket into the ground. Djokovic complained about it being a double standard.
Djokovic, by the way, a man.
Yeah, well, you're right. In 2017... he called a violation on Rafael Nadal. Nadal thought the call was selectively enforced and he was not satisfied with it. A time violation, a penalty violation. And then in the French Open in 2016, he called somebody for yelling at a towel boy. And then in 2016 at the Olympics, He called Andy Murray for code violation and saying, quote, stupid umpiring. So this guy, I mean, there's a big list of them. I mean, he's one of those guys that he just has a reputation. And if that's the case, then, you know, I don't know what Serena's complaining about.
Especially when he's warned you twice again. Yeah. So you got your warning. Then you continued to push it by breaking your racket. So you get a point penalty. Like, at that point, then you don't keep going to the official. Like, you realize, okay, he's being a stickler. Like, you should even know, even if you knew coming in, that he was a stickler. Today, he's especially being a stickler. So just back off. I think she knew she was going to lose. I think she was embarrassed by the way Osaka played. And that's why she flipped out. She started worrying about, like, her daughter and being caught as a cheater and not worrying about anything else. I think that's why she flipped out. She was thoroughly outplayed.
All right, we will talk to the man who has his own special-made blazer. That's right, the inside of his jacket. It's got his face all over it. We will talk to him as well as Mark Bertrand right after this.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. The man has his own jacket with pictures of his head inside of it.
How many people in the world can say that?
The owner of
one.
I don't even know.
His name is Zolak.
Scott, did you get your own Zoblazer as well? Because I know that they're auctioning off one. The guys at Mr. said, if you haven't seen it, you got to go to @TucherandRich. I've tweeted out a photo of the blazer that they have made, that they're like, I think they're auctioning it for charity, or there's some way you can buy it. Or
yeah, 20% of it is, or 25%, I think, is going to go to support the MGH fight for type 1 diabetes, which my middle daughter has. Yeah, it's a sweet jacket.
Okay, it's when somebody told me about it, when I think it was Wallach who told me about it first.
They're custom.
I'm like, that sounds, you know, ridiculous. And then I saw it, and it's way cooler than I thought it was going to be. It's like really funny because it's like a cartoon of your face.
It's a little cartoon, though. Yeah.
Well, it's Brian Fox, the great local artist who does a ton of stuff for the Patriots.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal artist. He designed the whole inside of the jacket.
Okay. All right. So, do you get to keep one?
Oh yeah, they gave me one the other night. All I just got to go in and get it tailored. Yeah.
Just show it off.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'll wear it. It's like a smoking jacket. Yeah.
It's like a boomerang. It's the mushroom jacket. You got a cool one.
Right. Yeah. So it's pretty neat. Yeah, I appreciate it. Mr. Sid, they take great care of us.
Excellent. Okay, I do need to know, because I brought it up to Sosi.
What'd you bring up?
Where's the Golden Tate guy? Where's the receiver that you said the Patriots are going to be getting?
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming.
It is coming.
It's coming. Okay. Could happen this week. Because what's
the
key?
I love that you're still certain.
What's the key? Week one is done, which means you do not have to guarantee the person's salary, whoever you're going to bring in.
Good point. Good point.
So now, I mean, if they pulled whatever trade or signed anybody that's still a free agent, they would, and that person is a vested veteran, and he was on that roster week one, they guarantee the whole salary.
So what you're saying is that more than likely it's going to happen before game two?
Probably within the next 2 weeks, yeah.
And it's Dez Bryant.
Who knows?
Well, Dez Bryant just did. Dez Bryant's like, essentially begging like to be on the saying. Patriots. He's begging to be on the Patriots right now. However, he's probably still asking. If he was asking for anything reasonable, that being like $2 million, he'd be on a team.
Correct. I think he's asking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 to $8 million,
which is the stupidest
down
thing
from his $16 million salary.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Not a chance.
Nobody wants you at that money. If you want to, you know, if you really want to,
he's coming in. Whoever's coming in is going to come in at the Patriots price.
Okay. You just said he's coming in at the Patriots price.
Whoever's coming in is coming in at the Patriots price.
Although, in fairness, I would not put Dez Bryant in at the Golden Tate level.
I just, I would say, I would have higher expectations.
I'm a nice man.
That's what he said.
That's a big market tease, ladies and gentlemen.
I think there's a little bit of a reveal there.
Market tease. No reveal. I don't know who the person is. I have no clue.
All right, what you got coming up today? So.
Oh, we got a lot of football. We got a lot of stuff to get to.
No Red Sox?
Some of the stuff. Jimmy Stewart's the only person in the Boston market watching Emma. Aaron Rodgers is a stud.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And Wallach, too. Watch Red Sox.
Thank you.
How about Mahomes? Did you see Mahomes yesterday?
Yeah, he looked
good. Yeah. Awesome.
Yep.
Kansas City sure did. A pain in the ass.
Giddy up. I mean, whoever grabbed him early in fantasy, you got it rolling, man. Because, not high expectations for him.
All right. We will be back tomorrow. I'll have Adam Jones with me. Goodbye.
This is the home of the New England Patriots.
Sports Hub, the Beasley Media Group Station.